Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the ECLAS ALS Criteria and Expectations Task Force meeting on the 18th of September 2015. On the call today, we have Olivier Kirpen-Lebrun, Yuri Landipuro, Maureen Hilliard, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Sirenish Vardanyan, Aaron Greenberg. That was on the English channel. On the Spanish channel, we have Harold Arcos. And we received apologies from Jatania Ramachandran, Juan Manuel Rojas, Devon Antiluxin, Vanessa Tagini, Leon Sanchez, Wolf Ludwig, Glenn McKnight, and Tijani Benzema. From staff, we have Heidi Ulrich and myself, Natalie Peregrin. Our interpreters today are Veronica and David. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes, and also to please remember to speak slowly and clearly so the interpreters can do their jobs. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Natalie. The agenda today is relatively simple. It is a review of from the four design teams, a brief discussion or perhaps announcement, because I'm not sure we talked about it before, that we do have staff allocated to do specific detail work, and then a brief discussion of what we think we can get done for Dublin and how much time we need to handle this in Dublin, and then any other business. Are there any questions, comments about the agenda, or can we accept it as shown? Hearing no voices, seeing no hands, we'll accept the agenda and go on to the first item. The first design team is the one on the application process, with Natalie leading it. Natalie, you have a bullet under it on a report, but that's no document, so I presume it's going to be a verbal report, or you're going to show it to us now.
Yes, this is Natalie. Apologies for that. We both Terry and I have tried desperately to stop uploading to the wiki and in the last hour, and we've had a failure. So the minute we get that solved, I'll update it to the agenda page. However, it is posted in the Adobe Connections for now, so if you like, I can give you a brief update on the work we've done up to now.
Yes, please, go ahead.
So the drafting team A has Juan Manuel Rojas, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Alan Greenberg, and myself, Nancy Perrigan. We had a first meeting on Monday last week, and we started a broad discussion on a few precise points and came to a few conclusions which I found interesting at least, so we'll be really interested to know what you think. The questions raised were circulated on the mailing list, on the task force mailing list, just before and during the week. So we went over those. I'll go to slide 9 quickly now. We went over those quickly as an introduction to the call. Most of the detail of these questions can be found on the drafting team A wiki page, which is created from the main task force page. What we covered were the following questions. So really noticing that there was a big difference in the quality of the information received from the applicants. This could hinge on their size, on if they were part of a mother organization or not. So is there something that we could be done to improve the information we ask from them in order to get a more equal input from the applicants? We then asked equally, is there anything that we could find out from the railers? Maybe railers with their cultural differences have different themes, angles they would be interested in. Is this something we could work with? We also asked the question whether due diligence should be a staff-community collaboration. More than that, and you'll see later on, we really tried to work on when staff-community collaboration is relevant during the application process and when it should be discarded. Noted again, other discrepancy in the regional advice, not necessarily the regional advice received, but more how it's processed within the individual railers. And then raise a point that was circulated on the mailing list. Is it a good idea to give ALAC members a week prior to the voting period start? So basically, upon receiving the voting information package, rather than starting the vote on that very same day, should they be given a week to look at the documentation and ask further questions, and then start the voting afterwards? So discussing that, we realized that we were aiming, we agreed more or less on the first possible outcome. There may be more to come. Obviously, we're looking for clear and more reliable information from the potential organizations. We needed to better define when the community could give information, feedback, and also ask questions about the application. This is before regional advice is asked, during regional advice, and then, as we mentioned earlier, during the voting period for the AILAC members. One new idea that came up during the meeting was the idea that I think was very smart, it didn't come from me, so I can say that, was to use the application period to stop on engagement. As we all know, we've been receiving applications, accrediting applications, and getting them involved in at large theoretically, and then they disappear into the jungle. So what if we started giving these ALSs, future ALSs, a bit more information the minute they applied? So going more into more detail of these changes quickly, in order to get more reliable information, we had a few shots at this one. Updating content on the application form, well, that's your starting point. Maybe giving fewer options to just not answer a question, making answers compulsory, and also making their qualifications, examples, maybe anecdotes, whatever, making those compulsory too, so we get a better picture of the applicant. Another problem raised is also giving the applicant the time, the opportunity to stop and start an application. Now, we haven't done that with the web-based form recently, and that might encourage the applicant to give more time to the application form. Also, we need to make the content of the application form a bit more sensitive to different types of applicants. For the moment, we've left it so generic that we might be excluding people rather than actually asking more precise questions about their website possibilities, about the state of their web access, for instance. These might be things that could make applicants feel more understood, more engaged within at-large right from the start. Another idea, as we mentioned, there was an issue with maybe only the primary or secondary contacts of an organization really having any links to at-large upon accreditation. If we could make this form printable so it could be circulated by the primary and secondary contacts within their organization, that could already be another kickstart to having the whole organization engaged and not just a few individuals. Right now, the form is printable, but the results are mediocre, so we would really need to work on that. Community input. We didn't necessarily come to an agreement, and I think there will be a lot more discussion about it, about when is community input good, necessary, and especially what do we mean by community input. We discussed community input during due diligence. We discussed, again, the discrepancies in the railroad. I think the main issue raised here for explaining why we didn't come to the table is because there's such a clear difference between the cultural differences between the railroads, but coming up with a precise structure is going to be difficult and, if anything, a hindrance to the accreditation period. What we did agree on, however, was this week given to ALAC members prior to the start of the vote. So it'd be good to see what you think. Regarding the engagement, this is just the last point and one I'm excited about. Many ideas were raised, giving maybe engagement webinars during the accreditation process or maybe getting them engaged within working groups. We realized that this would be maybe a bit too heavy-handed. However, dispensing bite-sized portions of information about at-large and at-large working groups could be helpful. This would go by the ICANN e-learning platforms, sharing recordings of previous webinars. And this would be part of an ongoing process of still encouraging each time this information is shared, encouraging the applicant to share this within his organization. This would be something that could be done through staff only. However, it would be a shame. We think that railroad and railroad leadership should miss out on this. So this should be maybe an approach, a pre-accreditation engagement approach that would be worth talking to railroads and getting staff and railroads to work together on this, because it could really make a big difference to ALS's activity once they're accredited. That's pretty much it for me. I know that Cheryl's on the call. I'm sure I missed out a few things. If you would like to add anything else to that.
Hi, Cheryl. For the record, I know that Alan's hand popped up just then as well, but Natalie's given a very extensive review. Yes, we did discuss a lot more, and particularly the mechanisms of getting our applicants, ALSs, and indeed individual members, engaged via RALO interactions through a more guided process is certainly where a lot of the exciting work is going to be. And the particular parts of the web-based form that is there now, I think a lot of our conversation is talking about how with the right sort of rejigging of questions and guiding people, you know, if you say this, then go to that, rather than have this huge form open in front of somebody, making it far more friendly a user interface, but also helping to ensure that the type of material that is put into the application is more useful for staff, because it's highly variable. It's a lot of great work that's happened, and I'm looking forward to Monday's call to find out where we're going to take this all to next. And I want to thank Natalie, who really did the hero's work on the basic proposals and discussion points. It gave us an excellent jumping off and a good discussion. With more to follow, but there's an awful lot that we need to talk just from this DTA with the regional leadership at a Dublin meeting. Thanks.
You still with us now?
Alan, I think you had it.
Oh, okay. I have a number of things, and in interest of full disclosure, I am on DTA, but I couldn't make the one meeting that's being held so far, so I'm listening to this all brand new. A couple of questions. First of all, statements. One of the things that really needs to be on your list is issues of privacy. Right now we have certain rules about what should happen with the application and the due diligence. We don't necessarily follow those rules. You know, for instance, some things are supposed to be confidential. They get put on public wikis. So we need some clarity, and the rules need to make sense, because if we're asking a RALO to evaluate something, then we need to make sure the RALO can evaluate it, if indeed, you know, we're expecting it to be done at a level below just the leaders. So that's number one. Number two, one thing that's missing right now, and it's related to my next point, is a summary to the ALAC. That is, what were the issues that were noted in the process, in the due diligence and RALO process, that we need to wave flags on? What were the issues which might have made it, you know, questionable whether it's being recommended, or the issues that were identified as reasons to not recommend them by the RALO? So that we provide to the ALAC the issues that they really need to focus on, the decision points. And the last thing is, and it's not really the application process. It goes into a much more deeper question, but what is the responsibility of the ALAC? I've always taken it that ALAC members may choose to simply say, I don't have enough time, I'll believe the RALO. But ALAC members really should be looking at the documents themselves, not just delegating to the RALO. I've seen something recently from at least one ALAC member who said, if the RALO recommends, I do not question it. And I think that's an abdication of responsibility that we should not be doing. But I think the DTA should be making some statements and making recommendations on how it should be working. So that's really the sum of my thoughts. Thank you.
Olivier, you have your hand up.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Olivier Capanoblon speaking for the transcript. My question is about the person who signs the form or who files the application. Are there any rules as to who has the ability to file the application, and to what extent the organization that they are filing the application for should be aware or implicated in it? I just remember some anecdotal evidence that some people had filed applications on behalf of their organization, but the organization itself, once these people had left the organization, was not even aware that they were an at-large structure and that they had been accredited. And so I'm not sure if there is any rule regarding this, and if there is any verification then that takes place afterwards or during the application process, that the organization is indeed willing to join. I'm concerned that we have so much of an emphasis on the actual representatives of the at-large structure and not enough on the at-large structure itself. Thank you.
Yeah, Olivier, it's Alan. I will be covering that under DTC, by the way, or at least part of that.
Cheryl, can I hop in on that? Because one of the things we discussed in DTA regarding rejigging the application, the web-based application, and that led to the printability issue, was by changing some of the information that is requested. We could tease out some of those issues, and the suggestion of making it easy, for example, ask, has your organisational management board, etc., leadership been read and understood the criteria listed above, that sort of stuff, print here, distribute and, respond. We can get them to make some statements that give those undertakings. The answer to the rules question there, though, Olivier, is sadly no. It is an expectation that if an organisation is joining, then the organisation should be aware of it. But as you've outlined, that has not, of course, always been the case. Some organisations are highly formalised in how they approach their application to become an accredited at-large structure, and some, as you've said, don't even know they are when you ask somebody, not even when the person's left. I've certainly been in a position where I've congratulated, a board member on another ISOC chapter, for example, about their recent accreditation, and they're going, what? Who? How? Who did that? So, yeah, there's tidying up there. So there's an interface with CNA, and I look forward to seeing that change. I put my hand up, however, from what Alan was saying, and that was this abdication of responsibility. I gave a bit of chapter and verse, surprisingly enough, about where the responsibilities lie on accreditation. And what we might be able to do, Natalie, is pull out some of that historical context and formalise it as information for ALAC members and the RALOs, that these are ICANN accreditations that have been given to the 15-person ALAC to undertake on behalf of ICANN, and the RALO advice fits into an engagement desire, not so much a total guidance. We can tidy a lot of that up, Alan, and I'm certainly looking forward to doing that in this process, because to have someone say to you, as you just outlined, that if the region says yes, they say yes and think no more, and if the region says no, they say no and think no more. This is a terrifying point to me, because it's the ALAC responsibility to act on behalf of ICANN in this accreditation process. So ALAC members need to learn a lot more about that as well. And your report concept there, we could guide that process a little bit more effectively with doing a report to the ALAC, which makes clear. We could even get people to have to say yay or nay to a couple of things before they go into the voting period, which as Stephanie also suggested, there's a proposal to delay between getting information packages and starting the vote. So all good work happening, but we certainly need to make sure we don't drop the ball on some of these things, that's for sure. Thank you.
Alan, you have your hand raised?
Yep, thank you, Natalie. Just a follow-on on asking questions. We're never going to be in a position, you know, that we get notarized documents from the president or whatever of the association saying that they want to be an ALS. But right now we have so much disinterest that we don't even ask. So, you know, it's not a matter of guarantees, but it's a matter of what have we noted over the last number of years that are problematic with what we are doing today and rectifying that. And Cheryl's anecdote of congratulating a board member of an ISOC chapter and they say, what, who, is such an anecdote that I think we have to make sure we cover as we go forward. Thank you.
This is Nata. I see no more hands raised. I'll hand the call back over to you, Alan. Thank you very much.
Alan, have you muted yourself?
No, I hadn't muted myself, but I had switched from speakerphone to not, and I missed a couple of words in the middle. So I didn't realize I was being called upon. All right, but I am now called upon. What I've put together is a quick summary of where I believe we are on the criteria. This is a combination of essentially what was in my original discussion paper plus the discussions we have had. We haven't had a DTC meeting as such, but we have discussed it a number of times at this meeting. And I think that's where we are right now, that specifically we are talking about no change in the base requirements that we currently have, self-funding, largely led by individual users and, the other words that talk about, what can there be, and to what extent can there be government, or commercial involvement in it. We had an extensive discussion at the last meeting on trying to work around this issue of phantom ALSs that are just one person or something like that. And the comment from Cheryl was that AP Rallo has three contacts, and I think that is a good thing, and don't think that's a bad thing to make mandatory. In relation to our previous discussion, the contacts don't have to be the leaders, but the application must make it clear that the leaders acknowledge and support this, that the application, this is the group joining, and without that, we know we don't necessarily have that level of support. We need certification, and again, certification means someone says, that whoever are the contacts or the lead contact has an ability to communicate with the organizational membership, because one of the main reasons we have contacts is to act as a conduit for information back and forth, and certainly outgoing information at the very least. We have no minimum size, but we are expecting something greater than just the contacts or the organizational leaders, and I think that's going to be a judgment call when the evaluation is done, what is right and what is reasonable. And what we've discussed before, I think, and is the really core of it, is we want to know what the nexus point is, what the intersection is between this organization's interest and ICANN. Too often in the past, and certainly at the very start of this process, when we were doing the initial recruiting of ALSs, we basically said, you have an interest in the Internet, then this is for you. And not surprisingly, we have found out that that isn't necessarily the case. And as much as an organization that does good stuff on the Internet is something that is worthy in its own right, it's not clear what the connection is with ICANN. And I think we need to decide if we want that connection there, then we need to ask what it is. If indeed we believe that connection is not important, then I think that's an interesting discussion we need to have. Certainly not what I would tend to recommend. And I think that's it. And I guess at this point we need an active discussion on, is there anything in this list that's wrong that I didn't capture from previous discussions properly, and what's missing? Olivier.
Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier for the transcripts. One thing which you have alluded to, but which I think is going to be absolutely key on ALS criteria, is the nature of the organization that is applying. And we have seen that some of the more problematic discussions where some peer reviewers thought that organization was fitting within the ALS criteria and others thought that it didn't, was to do with the commercial aspect of an organization. We have seen a union of lawyers that was seen by some as being a purely commercial organization that was better suited to go in the BC, the business constituency, whilst others thought, well, hang on, no, it's an association. An association of whoever it is doesn't need to be in the BC. It's an association with a heavy emphasis on end users. There's a bit of wool around this, of confusion around this, and I really think that working this one out all the way to really focus on what we want at the end is going to help our at-large structures when they make a peer review of new applicants. Because, as I said, that's where I found in the years that I was a like chair, and you probably are finding it now as well, was the most conflictual and problematic thing. Is this an organization that should be an ALS, or is it commercial, or is it non-commercial, is it academic? Really, really tough discussion on this one. Thank you.
Yeah, let me say a few words before going down on the queue on that. The current rules, and not only the rules, but there's an interpretation document that goes along with it that talks about how do you recognize a group which is eligible from one which is not eligible. And we spent a lot of time on that and found it was very difficult to be very restrictive because of the norms in different parts of the world about how certain organizations are created and what their formal structures are. So we left that very open-ended. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be asking a question of what are you and how do you operate. And I think from my perspective, my last bullet point of what's the intersection with ICANN, the combination of the first questions in that one, I think addresses why should this group be an ALS or not. I may be wrong, but I think that covers it in my mind. Olivier, do you want to come back and tell me where we're missing something, and then we'll go on to Sarenish?
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. The concern is the actual nature of the organization itself. Who do they serve? Who are their main members? And as Fadi once said, I think it was Fadi, and in fact Steve Crocker has also said at another moment, was, well, we're all Internet end users. And that, in a way, plays in our advantage on the one hand, because we can indeed group a lot of people under the ALAC banner. On the other hand, it plays to our disadvantage because those parts of ICANN and even outside of ICANN that don't think that the ALAC and the at-large and the end user is a stakeholder in itself are saying, well, you guys are already somewhere, you know, you're already represented elsewhere, either in civil society or in the business, private sector, etc. And I think we really need to clear this one out and basically define who is eligible as an organization to be part of that large. I'm concerned that if we don't really spend time on this, we are going to continue having problems where some regions have one interpretation, others have a different interpretation, and it's not a level playing field at all. It leads to bad blood because you get people that apply or organizations that apply that then will be rejected on a vote. That might even be a very tight vote on this. Secondly, the one other thing that I didn't notice there was also the jurisdiction. And by that I mean, does an organization need to actually have a legal status by being registered somewhere? I know that at the moment, I don't think there is a rule regarding this. I don't know if there should be a rule regarding this. I know that in some countries it's very difficult to have a legal body, a body that has been registered in one way or other. And you can have unincorporated associations, which are even more active sometimes than the incorporated associations. So that's another facet. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before going on to Sirenish, on that last point, we do specifically have a rule that it does not need a legally incorporated for just the reasons that you mentioned. So that was carefully done at that point.
Can I just note that my screen has frozen and I can't take my agree down? I'm sure I will be agreeing with Sirenish, but I'm going to have to reboot, so...
Sirenish, go ahead.
Do you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, this is Sirenish. This is Sirenish. I just wanted to agree with the point that contacts do not need to be the organization leaders, as in some cases in Kerala we came to that point that the information is being missed when the only contact there is the director or the leader of the organization. And we found out a couple of other people from the organizations who were interested but were not involved in any mailing list. So we encouraged them to become at least to subscribe to a mailing list. And it helped also for the ALS itself to be aware of the other activities. And in many cases, it also activated the participation of ALS and brings to the next point that information is being shared by this contact person to the representative of their ALS. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we're wandering.
I agree with that point.
Yeah, we're wandering into the ongoing activities, which is Yuria's design team. So we should, you know, try to keep it down to the expectations of what you need to be to join, and of course perhaps keep on doing them, but nevertheless. I had my hand up to respond to something, but I can no longer remember what it was, so I will put my hand down.
Hand up, Alan. I haven't got back
yes,
in the room.
Yes, go ahead, Cheryl.
Thanks. Just on that point Sirenish was raising, and does have an intersection both with some of the proposals coming out of DTA as well as the ongoing stuff that Yuria will be looking at in greater detail. And we do have to keep gathering and getting these different design teams work discussed in the committee of the whole, because there is an awful lot of nexus in each of our work areas with others. But part of the opportunity of little bite-sized education opportunities and getting to know ICANN and what ICANN does and how it does it going on during the application process concept was to also ensure that there is opportunity to do more than just interact and encourage interaction with just the nominated representative. And so we will tend to see in the future, in utopian future perhaps, our nominated representatives from an at-large structure being the ones who have the power to vote, the authority to vote on behalf of their organisation. So if A isn't there, go to B, and if B isn't there, go to C, sort of thing. But in fact, we can try and make sure that the wider membership feels comfortable that they are welcome in RALO meetings, in ICANN activities, in work groups, etc., etc. So there's as I said earlier, an awful lot of opportunity, and it's going to be exciting times if you get it right, of course. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. No, okay. I'm gonna drop it for the moment, but let's go on. Does anyone else have any other comments? Nothing else. All right, we'll go on to DTE. That's ALS Operational Expectations. Yuria is chairing that. I have some thoughts. I know Yuria. I think Yuria wanted to make some comments first, and then we can go on to what I put together. Thank you.
Okay, this is Yuria for the transcript record. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, a couple of weeks ago, I sent to the list with the Slack DTE some ideas, and there wasn't much of a reaction. I think that I got Wolf said that he supports them, but we haven't had much interaction within the team as such so far. Anyway, what I would suggest is that it's fairly some minimum operational expectations are fairly self-evident. I mean, we expect some reports from the AOSCs. We expect them to disseminate ICANN news within their organization and maybe even wider, and so on and so forth. But to my mind, the heart of the matter is whether we can integrate the AOSCs into the advice and policy process of the ROLOs and ALAC. In this connection, as I said in my input to the list, I think that the recommendation 28 from Atlas 2 should be implemented a bit further. I mean, it is implemented in the sense that there is some statistical information about the various types of expertise that are available in the various railroads. But what we really would need, to my mind, is really to map, as it said in the recommendation, map the current expertise and interests within the membership, so that when there are items which would benefit from grassroots input from the LLCs, the ROLOs could actually address directly somebody who is known to be the best expert on privacy issues or human rights related issues, so on and so forth. And the other thing is also that I think that the ALSCs should be expected to be active partners in whatever multi-stakeholder internet governance arrangements there are on the national level. Thank you.
Thank you, Yuria. You raised the issue that I was going to comment on following Cheryl's comment, and I decided to defer it, but I think the time is ripe now. You made reference to the survey that we did, that each of the RALOs did on the trying to categorize and catalog the knowledge and of experience that we have out there. And every single RALO did it for the representative or representatives, perhaps, that we have on file. And the fact that we have a lot of lawyers as representatives or a lot of programmers or a lot of whatever is almost irrelevant. It should be. It should be the power that we have behind the representatives, not just the representatives. And I think that shows the mindset that we're currently in, that the representative is the ALS and is the sum total of the ALS. And I think that's perhaps the single thing that we need to completely change our mindset on. Thank you.
Can I just give a here to that? I think that's extraordinarily important.
Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier speaking for the transcript. And you are absolutely correct on this. You're spot on. In fact, I have an example, a recent example, where in Uralo, there are quite a few APLOT structures that are very knowledgeable about who is issue and issues of privacy. And one of our ALSs actually responded to a public comment directly, but never actually let us know in advance that they were going to do so, and never even contributed to the ALAC's own statement on the issues, which I think is a pity. And had we known the actual knowledge and the actual talent that we have, not only from the ALS representative, but the ALS itself, we would have been able to actually search, do a search when the public comment comes out, and gone to them and asked them directly, rather than just having these announcements made out there. I think that if we want to better involve our ALSs in what we do, we need to target things towards them. Of course, the policy process management system that will probably be much further in the future will do that automatically. But if at least we had a database and knew, these are the ALSs, and I'm saying here ALSs, not ALS reps, that have this knowledge on this topic, we can even send a private email to them and say, look, that looks like something you could really help in. Are you able to contribute to that? So I fully support this process forward. Now, how do we proceed forward? I would say come up with another survey. I had a look at the results of the first surveys. I felt they were okay, but didn't quite go far enough to get us to know our ALSs better. The other thing is perhaps to ask that when a RALO has a general assembly taking place, they would use that opportunity to actually conduct interviews with each one of their ALSs and find more about them. It doesn't need to be the whole, a complete session, but you could have a staff member and a member of the leadership of that RALO interview each one of the ALSs for 10 minutes, let's say, during breaks, lunchtime, this sort of thing. And this could be something that could start, for example, with Uralo over in Dublin, as early as that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's not get into problem solving of how we make it work. Let's try to identify what the issues are and what we want to make mandatory, not how to fix the problems. Anyone else a comment on this? Otherwise, I'd like to briefly go over the notes that I put together. Olivier, new hand, old hand? Old hand. All right. What you see on the pod, and it's linked to in the agenda, is I just pulled out the items that I put that I had in my original discussion paper, and those are the first five bullets, and then other ones that have come to my mind as we're going forward. A lot of the RALOs really put the emphasis on voting. That is, if you vote, you're a member. If you don't vote, we're going to suspend you. And perhaps as a result of that focus, or perhaps it's just human nature, but we have marvelous participation in voting very often, and the people never show up any other time. And if voting is the only reason they're there, we're not doing our job, and we're not being very successful. So voting may well be a criteria for continued participation, but it shouldn't be the one that we're focusing on as the main issue. It should almost be an ancillary thing. The question of should ALSs have to participate on a regular basis, and that doesn't mean you can't miss one in the monthly RALO meetings. And what does participation mean? Does simply dialing in mean? Do you have to actually say something every once in a while? Good questions. But I would have thought that if you don't ever participate in the RALO meetings, why are you here? Now, the answer may be you're a very active work group participant, but you find the RALO meetings a waste of time. That may be a valid answer. But not doing anything is probably problematic. Should we have a grace period if active participation is necessary? Should there be a grace period that we know it's going to take a bit of time? Should there be a requirement for substantive participation, be it work groups, webinars, again, and do we need to define inactive on a cross-RALO basis? Because right now, these tend to be something that is done purely within the RALO, so do we need any uniformity on some of these rules, or not rules, some of these practices? Perhaps is the best question. I have nothing more. Yuria, anything else you want to add, or does anyone else want to add anything on DTE? We are 10 minutes before the hour, so I think we probably need to move on if there's nothing obvious.
It's Yuria.
Okay, go ahead, Yuria.
Yeah. I'd like to see some, perhaps if we could discuss on the email list a bit about this substantive participation from the ALSEs, then I would like to put something in writing and circulate that. Thank you.
Okay. I guess the real question is, if you don't attend webinars, you don't attend monthly meetings, you don't participate in any, when I say don't, I mean nobody from the ALS does any of those things, are you really there? And I don't know how to answer it, but I think we need to look at it. Cheryl, DTI.
Thank you. I don't have a written report or anything to present. It's Cheryl for the record. However, we haven't met. One of the good news pieces, however, is that we've got an intention to at least have something to be discussed from a AP RALO context on an aspect of individual membership. To some extent, I would suggest it is a criteria issue, but it's also how to put it. It's how to come up with perhaps a way that will work for one of the most problematic regions, our own Asia Pacific, when it comes to individual membership. We do have to find a smart way that will not allow capture, that allows the necessary voting aspects of what we expect from occasionally from at-large structures and from what we would also assume is groupings of individual members rather than each individual member. Otherwise, we could have single countries flooding quite literally hundreds of individual members into capture and things. So we're doing a bit of work on that, and that will transfer across to DTI as well. But very briefly, and it's good that it is brief this time because of how much we've chatted on the other very important pieces of work that are underway. The good news story is much of what we can do in DTI will act as solutions or compensators for some of the problems that are being identified in the other DTs. The issue of minimal number and small numbers of participants out of if that's even a solo participant out of an at-large structure. Well, the reason that they're probably single person or two or three at most out of rather larger organisations that are hopefully still engaged with their ALS work it can be solved if they can have that opportunity to interact and perform what they think is important input into ICANN and from ICANN into their communities as individuals. So getting the individual membership working across all the RALOs and getting it working equitably across all the RALOs is going to actually give us a lot of solutions as well as opportunities to do some of these transition pieces. At the moment, AP RALO is finding, for example, that we're having an individual membership taken up by keen people who have had an interaction with local outreach, for example, and engagement, and they start working as an individual member within the region, but it is their intention to build a critical mass in some cases and start an association and or organisation that will then become an at-large structure, and when that happens, of course, they stop being an individual member. But we can also do that in the reverse. We can have a situation where one or two people who still maintain an interest and a desire to input into ICANN activities could roll back to being an individual member when we, in inverted commas, decertify, de-accredit an at-large structure which organisationally either doesn't wish to involve, or of course you might have a change of management, a change of directorship, a change of their own five-year plan, and they may say, no, we as an entity no longer wish to be an ICANN accredited structure. So when that happens, the individual membership thing can act as a safety net for the individuals with expertise, hopefully, that do want to engage. And I'm sorry I'm not in the room. If there's hands up, you'll have to tell me because I'm trying to log back in again. Thank you.
There are no hands up. I will, however, add a here to that. I personally know of a number of cases in the last year or two where people said, I want to participate, but, I can't get my organization to join as an ALS, and therefore I can't do anything. And we really have to get out of that mode.
Yeah,
we've got
a way out through that, yeah.
Olivier, go ahead. We're 5 minutes before the hour, and I don't know how long the interpreters can keep on going, so let's try to finish up soon.
Thanks, Alan. It's Olivier speaking for the transcript. A quick one for Cheryl regarding the individual members. As you know, both NARALO and URALO have slightly different models. Are you going to study the two models and see which ones would fit better for the other regions?
Indeed, Olivier, Cheryl, for the record. The wiki page that I am editing but have not managed to complete, the very top of it looks at the any rule and any mechanism and process that is enshrined within the existing documentation and rules of procedure for each RALO. And of course, I somewhat foolishly perhaps started with AP RALO because that's the one where we've recently redone the rules, and seeing as Maureen and I penned those particular parts of the rules, I was very familiar with it. But unfortunately, What has happened is, I know that somewhere in the wonderful world of the wiki, there will be the final and updated document, which I'm assuming will be in PDF and Word. The best I could find yesterday in the work group area from the Rules of Procedure Review from my region was a penultimate draft of those rules. So I cut out the excerpt because I was also confident that there wasn't much change between that draft and the final. And when I have cut it out and put it into a Word document, so I can then bring it back across to the DTI wiki page that I'm working on at the moment, the formatting disaster I am still working my way through. I can't tell you how much of my Friday night I just gave up and went out to dinner because I wasn't going to spend any more time trying to put words back together because I have a 84-page long document, centre-focused with, you know, three words on each line. It's horrifying. So what I did want, perhaps, is a staff could assist me by, if not finding me the most up-to-date either finalised or draft of the rules of procedure from each RALO, I prefer not to have the full rules. What I would love to do is get you to send me an excerpt of anything relevant to individual members. And it may, as it does in AP RALO's case, come in more than one place within the rule. But I want to get those excerpts and put it out so then we can look at exactly what you've said, but try and develop a best of breed or at least discuss the differences. But I'm infuriated with my inability to find the actual ultimate rules of procedure by doing a simple search on the wiki space and the formatting disaster that's happened. So any assistance I can get from staff to not make me try and slip my wrist with a butter knife over this would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. there are many documents which exist within the ICANN world and certainly within the at-large world, but ICANN in general, where you will never, ever find the final document. All you will ever find is the draft. That's rule number one. Rule number two is, for the longest time, and I haven't seen it recently, to someone's credit, PDFs created on Macs, when you try to cut and paste from them, show up as one word per line. I've never figured out why, and it doesn't seem to happen anymore, so I think someone may have fixed it. But there's a huge number of PDF documents on the ICANN website which you cannot cut and paste with without having to remove all the artificial line feeds or whatever they are. Anyway, so much for your rant and my rant. We will go on now.
Can I just respond to Sylvia, please? Because I think her proposal of doing me up a table is lovely. Thank you very much. I would definitely like that. But I also want excerpt, actual excerpt of the relevant rules where they exist.
It's a particularly difficult job, and I'm sure Sylvia can pull out the appropriate paragraphs from either the operating principles or the rules of procedure, because we use those two terms interchangeably, and everyone has both of them. And some of the rules are in one, and some are in the other.
Yep.
But I'm sure that can be done. That's taken as a request, if no one has noted. The next item is Heidi still on the call? Heidi?
Hi. Heidi, sorry. Took me a while to get off mute.
Can you give us a one-minute summary of the resources that you can make available to this working group and its design teams, if necessary, to try to get more detailed information about stuff?
Yes, I'm very happy to. So we are very fortunate to have additional assistance, temporary assistance, to be able to take part in helping this group. And we were thinking it would be where this person, along with other allies,
Is that
can you still hear me?
Have we lost?
Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And that is Ozan Sahin, who normally works with the stakeholder engagement part of policy, and he is ready to begin. I believe he's even on the call. And he will be in Dublin, and he will be following this group until the until it completes its work.
So in summary, we have a staff person who can do work, including, if necessary, contacting ALSs or talking to RALOs or trying to put things like that together.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay. The last item is planning for Dublin. I had hoped we would be far enough along that we could be presenting something to the group in Dublin, refining it if necessary, and perhaps even approving things. We clearly are not at that stage. The real question at this point is how much time, what do we think we will be able to have done, be done by Dublin, and how much time do we need at that meeting? Anyone have any quick thoughts on that? Nobody does? Well, let me tell you what I'd like to have done then. Go ahead.
No, sorry, I just was going to say, I think we do need to have a conversation that includes the regional leadership on some of the things of where we're up to, particularly, for example, with DTA, but probably some of the others as well.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed we don't have more regional leadership other than Sirenish actively participating in this group. We have a prospective chair in Olivier. But yes, what I would like to do is have each design team, and I know there's significant overlap, and we're going to have to live with that, make a presentation of something that may not be final, because in some of these areas we have more work to be done than we're likely to get done in the time that we have between Dublin, especially given the fact that some of us are involved in other things that also are high priority. But I think for each of the design teams, we need to put something on the table as a draft, labeling it as almost complete or really rough, and have a substantive discussion on each of them. It's going to be a really difficult discussion to have because it's really easy to go off on tangents. And I will do my best to lay the ground rules out and then to keep it focused. My feeling is we need at least a half hour on the average on each of these design teams, and that means we need to allocate at least 2 hours total. And if it's to include the secretariats, that means it has to be on the Sunday or the Tuesday sessions. Anyone strongly disagree? Other than Heidi and Gisela, who are going to tell me it's going to be impossible. They're not allowed to
I don't disagree,
anything.
But I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't disagree, Alan, but I do think it's probably more appropriate on the Tuesday, I suppose, which would change a lot of the scheduling, but it may not be impossible to perhaps, you know, even split it if we can't get the lumps of time you desire.
I'm sorry, even? I missed the verb.
Well, you could split it, so, you know, because...
Split it. Oh no, yeah. I wasn't saying two contiguous hours, necessarily. I was saying two hours, probably 2 one-hour chunks. And since secretariats may not be there on the Saturday, it really has to be Sunday or Tuesday. We are meeting Saturday, but the only people who are guaranteed to be there are ALAC members and chairs.
Great, yes. Yeah.
All right, so I think we have a plan. I really do not know at all whether we've already allocated that much time or if on the right days, but we'll work around it and try to do our best. Any other business?
Alan, did you note in the chat, Heidi's already got you an hour on the Sunday, so it may be that we need to grab an hour on the, an additional time on a Tuesday, but I'll leave that.
No, I wasn't looking at the chat, but we'll work it out somehow, even if we have to start at 3 in the morning. Cheryl, that will be easy according to Cheryl's standards.
Yep.
Olivier.
Thanks very much, Adam. Olivier Calpano speaking for the transcript. A quick question regarding ALS vote weighing on a per-country basis. This is in use in Lac Rallo, the larger one by number of ALSs, the largest region by number of ALSs. Is this work within the remit of this working group?
Probably not. And I will tell you that it is in use in Lac Rallo. It has been suggested that it might be appropriate for AFRALO, and there is a strong push in Lac Rallo to stop doing it. So the vote is out. But I'm not sure that an internal voting mechanism is within the remit of this group. I would entertain a discussion on it, on the mailing list to start with, advocating why you think it is or not, but it doesn't sound like it's within the remit of what's formally on our table.
It's Olivia speaking. Is it perhaps the remit of the secretariats to discuss this with each other?
It certainly is. Why are you asking, I guess?
Yes, I'm asking because having seen the growth of the number of ALSs that we have in each region, to me, my personal feeling is that the weighting on a per-country basis somehow alleviates the danger for capture. If a specific country has an overall plan of perhaps influencing the work in a region more than they could very easily start creating a number of at-large structures with various names, with various numbers of people, and edge towards capture. I think that's what Cheryl might have alluded to actually earlier in our call. And so I wonder whether there should be discussion and some study of the advantages and inconvenience of a per-country weighing scenario, and secondly also whether there would be the ability to perhaps harmonize this across the regions rather than each region having its own way.
Oh, thank you. Okay, a couple of things and then I'll go to Cheryl. The reason it is to be considered in AFRALO is for exactly the reason you suggest, because some people believe that some people in some countries are trying to stack the deck, so to speak. The reason it is being objected to in Lac Rallo is countries where there are a significant number of ALSs feel that they have been disadvantaged by this and no one's listening to them because they have less weight than other ALSs in a country where there may only be one. So, it depends which side you're arguing on. I'm not sure it is within our remit. I believe Cheryl was talking about the same effect, but with individual members. But, the impact can be there. One thing that we do need to discuss that we haven't yet is if you read the bylaws imply that the ALS, that the criteria for certifying an ALS may vary by country to by region to region. That was not implemented when we did the original one. We went for uniformity. I personally believe that should be stricken from the bylaws because I believe that could introduce a really deleterious effect if each region can set radically different criteria depending on their local needs or what they perceive as their local needs or what the leaders at the time perceive as their local needs. So I am going to strongly advocate that when we eventually change the bylaws, and they will have to be changed because of the work we're doing right now, that we in fact remove that. But that is probably something we need to discuss further. Cheryl.
I agree with you totally on that last part, Cheryl, for the record. But to Olivier's point, which is I'm just going to put on the ALAC review hat at the moment, That is something, of course, which rightfully should, could, and I would encourage us to be looked at as we go into our next review of ALAC, which will focus not just on the 15-person ALAC and its relationships with the board, etc., but also quite specifically on ALSs and regional at large organisations. So I think it's certainly something that has to be dealt with. We're aware of it with Asia Pacific, because if you want a stack of decks, believe me, we can have that as an art form. We've got the numbers, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm happy to do that. I have no problem with that at all. You know, if you want to do capture, I know how to do that very well. And I can run a quick program to make sure that happens. But there is more ways than just voting, waiting by country to fix these issues. And one way, for example, that we do this in Asia Pacific is the criteria for voting in some of our organisations. And here I'm talking about things like our regional IGF work and things like that. You have to have been active in the last 6 months, you know, to vote. So, you know, there's a set of activity criteria that are put out, and, you know, some years you'll get to vote and some years you won't. Because, for, you know, whatever reason, you know, you broke your leg and you were having operations, so you missed out on, you know, the necessary number of meetings to be in, you know, those sorts of things. So there's a bunch of ways we can skin this cat, but it certainly does need to be killed, slaughtered, skinned, dissected, and the fur put on our shoes and socks and hats.
Thank you, Cheryl. And I agree, the at-large review is probably the proper place to have that discussion. And I honestly don't know the right answer. I started off with the personal position that I thought that the concept of country-weighted voting was absolutely ludicrous and there was no reason to do it. I am changing that position in regions where there are a lot. Number one, a large number of countries. Number two, the size of the countries varies radically. And where there is often, I'm not quite sure how to say it, because what I'm going to say isn't quite the right words, but where there is often strong political issues and undercurrents going on. And, you know, certainly in some of our regions, that is very much the case. So it's a good question, and I don't know what I'm not sure there's a universal answer. I know that if you went to into the North American region, you would not find a lot of support for.
Well, because you don't have a lot of countries.
Well, we only have two countries, but we have a number of territories, and yeah. It's not clear that the territories would not end up getting the same weighting as the country. And that clearly would not be appropriate, because that would provide an opportunity for capture. Capture by the smallest entities, not the largest, but nevertheless. So it's not clear there's a one-size-fits-all, but it is a rather interesting discussion. Any last words? Then I call the meeting to an end.
Just hang on, Todd. Hang on. Just because you may not have been noticing the chat again, Alan. When Heidi pointed out that on the Tuesday the schedule starts at 8:30 and finishes at 8 p.m., that is, can I just say, bloody stupid, and I do hope the interpreters don't mind my profanity there, but that was the nicest profanity I could come up with for us, you might have to just make it a tasting plate for these topics and just give us 15 minutes each, or probably 10 minutes with a bit of intro and a bit of extra time in the hour that is dedicated to it on the Sunday, because that is the most ridiculous schedule I've ever seen.
Cheryl, if I may add my personal rant, you will recall that we distributed a list of possible speakers for people to identify the ones that they really wanted and the ones that perhaps we could say no to this time. With very few exceptions, everyone said everyone is essential. So we've got a lot of people coming who are taking a lot of time, and I question how effective that's going to be, and I may end up perhaps with the ALT or perhaps on my own with Leon making some executive decisions.
That would be wise.
May I now adjourn?
Well, it's 6:15 in the morning here in Australia, so have a great evening, everybody else.
So your day is just starting then.
I'll have a Saturday, and you can all have a Friday.
Are you on Skype, Cheryl?
I will be in a moment, but Maureen's having a Saturday, too.
I will ask you a question on Skype. It'll be just one quick question. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye, all.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.